Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Now, since the last Zorogon Rogue, we've had the Minister of Finance, Enoch Onungwana, produce the medium-term budget policy statement last week. And it seems to have been fairly warmly received from a range of quarters in a way that budget-related pronouncements and prognostications have not been for very, very many years, and particularly given the major budget scenario that occurred this year with it being delayed due to disputes over the increase of on VAT, particularly, it seems like it was a complete change in tone and consideration. So I thought to unpack this, I would ask Chris Hutting, Executive Director of the Centre for Risk Analysis, to explain to us, Chris, first of all, what is the medium-term budget policy statement? What does it do? And why was it so warmly received?
Good morning, Sarah. Thanks for yet another opportunity to talk about financial and fiscal matters. You know how much I enjoy looking at spreadsheets and unpacking all these things. As our erstwhile colleague at the Institute, Ian Cruikshanks, you know, tried to reiterate a lot. It comes down to what this means for people's lives, you know, why are these numbers important? So just in a nutshell, the medium-term budget is a sort of projection towards the main budget for the following year. It sets various priorities and that the main budget then should hopefully ordinarily fall in line with. So various projections, estimates by National Treasury, for their credibility, it helps when the main budget then matches what they forecast or expected or announced in the mini budget. So it adds to their credibility if they get it broadly in line with their own calculations. And it also gives you a signal in terms of government's broader sort of monetary and fiscal policy. What are their priorities? Do they want to spend more, spend less? What sectors are they prioritizing? What are they doing for public sector workers? Are they going to continue to give support to certain industries? What's going to happen with taxes? All that sort of stuff. So it's I think in sort of good practice, it is a useful check-in, as it were, to the country's finances.
Mm. I mean, I gather that for a start, there was a bigger tax recovery this year than anticipated. Not so much on private income tax, but certainly on VAT. What is behind the increase in revenue? Because revenue is obviously always an attractive increase in revenue is always an attractive proposal to put before the public.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can say immediately, the increased revenue is not on the back of higher economic growth and growth of the middle class. So we have mentioned this week in our weekly client risk alert that we sent our clients every Monday morning, that there is a risk that our politicians and bureaucrats think, oh, there's more revenue coming in. Debt is expected to peak next year, so therefore everything's fine. What are we worried about? Like the economy, yes, we're only still growing around 1%, but we've got tariffs from the US and got tension around the G20, but actually things aren't that bad. So why do we need to, you know, reform in any substantial sense? But just on the revenue point specifically, I think a lot of it comes down to increased capacity on the part of SARS. We haven't necessarily seen that with things like the Madlanga Commission, which does ask the question, you know, if there is more investing in people and in sort of programming in AI to assist SARS to collect more revenue, why isn't that being targeted at the people, you know, that it should be with corrupt and wasteful expenditure? Mm-hmm. But that's another matter for another day. So it's mostly on the part of SARS functioning better than it has been for a few years now. Maybe that'll carry through. It's also been helped a little bit by the two-pot retirement system reform, where a lot of households took some of that just to spend. So pure spending would have led to some higher tax receipts and tax revenue collection. Okay. But I don't think it's sustainable, again, in the context of that our economy isn't growing as much as it should be.
Right. Did commodity prices affect the revenue intake?
Yes, absolutely. I think that's a very important point to highlight in the last 12 months, given the sort of the volatility coming from the US and questions about the Federal Reserve and the dollar and all that sort of thing. Generally, then your investors and your markets go to things like commodities, and South Africa has benefited from that because we do still export a lot just in terms of critical minerals, coal, those kinds of things. Again, we're not benefiting as much as we should have done. So if our ports, our railways were functioning like they should, if our mining sector wasn't, driven down as much as it has been in the last 15 years, we would have benefited even more from a tax revenue point of view. But yes, I think you're right to mention that. And I link it back to what I said earlier, the risk that this breeds some complacency. South Africa perennially rides these tailwinds from some commodity cycles turning upward. You can't plan your sort of fiscal stability on that alone, because there will be a downturn again at some point. So yeah, it's important for South Africa to get those policy structural reforms right, so that it isn't just a case of, well, let's wait for the next commodity cycle that helps our tax take.
So, again, we're looking at growth. What about expenditure? I mean, you talked about the sort of high expenditure items in the past of bailing out sort of failing or struggling SOEs, not to mention an always large public sector wage bill. And certainly at the national level, the sort of proportion of high sort of management to the sort of the middle management worker level is disproportionate. It's very, very high. And so we've always seen this extremely large public sector wage bill. How much is that always that tended to be part of the expense? How much percentage wise is that of tend to be of expen of our expenditure? And what they're talking about going forward?
Yeah, so the debt situation has been, more and more concerning for the last few years. That's, as you rightly point out, number one, because you're spending more, but you're not spending on productive things. You're just spending on salaries and other sort of vanity projects. I'm surprised there wasn't a line item for the G20 summit alone. There has been for the G20 presidency, but not for the summit alone, because that's going to cost quite a bit. Those of us in Johannesburg will have seen the orange pots and some of the G20 signs. I wonder who got that particular contract and how much that thing cost. But anyway, so just on the public service side, in this medium-term budget, more than two-thirds of total expenditure goes to civil servant wages, social transfers or grants, and debt service costs. So almost 60% of your total budget goes to those items. So the public sector wage bill, I think, continues to be a massive line item. There is talk of paring it down and pushing back on above inflation wage requests. But again, that'll come down to whether there's the political will or not. It's one thing to say, we pencil this in the budget, but it's another thing to then actually hold the line when it comes to those negotiations. Just on SOEs specifically, there was, I'm just trying to double check on the specific number, but there is increased support again for Transnet. So Eskom is looking a bit more stable, but Transnet, given its own debt situation, I think government is trying to say, look, we're trying to concession private investors in rail. Let's continue to give Transnet some support for the time being. Just to reinforce that point, Transnet was offered new support to the tune of 145.8 billion rand, which pushes government's contingent liabilities to over 700 billion rand. So it's a substantial amount still.
And the has things like the cut in interest rates and the strengthening of the rand, has that had a positive effect on reducing expenditure?
Yeah, that helps a lot on the debt, and especially your interest on your debt. So generally, when interest rates come down, your debt repayment costs are lower. So that helps a lot. The confirmation by Treasury that South Africa will now aim for this 3% fixed inflation target should help in the long term, because it also helps to manage sort of wage negotiations, expectations on the private and public sector side. But as the Reserve Bank Governor Lesetša Kanyoho, to his credit, has reiterated throughout his term, the Reserve Bank can do all it can on putting in lower interest rates. But if other government departments don't reform, if they continue to push up prices that they set, so electricity, water tariffs, municipal rates, those things continue to feed inflation and constrain economic growth. So I think that's very important to keep in mind. I think it's right to set a lower target for South Africa in this context of a sort of global context as an emerging market, but how you get there is the other question.
Right. Well, certainly lowering the inflation target also makes it more difficult, but not impossible, for the ANC's allies in COSATU to argue for higher wages due to a higher inflation rate, and although they seem to somehow always end up with more than the inflation rate, quite unlike in the private sector. Any generally any sense that there is any dent being made to the effect that corruption has on the cost to this economy? I mean, as you referred to the Madlanga Commission, and there's the ad hoc committee in Parliament looking into the alleged criminality at high levels in the police. But is there any real sense that any of this is making a difference from a financial point of view? Are we just hearing more about it?
Not in terms of the hard numbers, not yet. I think hopefully this can be sort of calculated at some point, but not for the time being. I think partly because, again, that, you know, brings home how much damage has been done, so you can avoid some accountability in that sense. But not in terms of the budgets themselves, not at this time.
Right. How much difference does it make? Because they talked about new offers of early retirement for 55 to 59-year-olds with no retirement penalty, and then 2 weeks for 20 years of service and 1 week thereafter, and similar situation for people in the retirement band from 60 to 63. My concern about this is, this in itself would require a greater expenditure to actually achieve this. And the other thing is whether you're not run the risk of losing institutional memory that you desperately need in a public service that one often feels is just not competent enough to get the work done. Do these measures actually end up saving money?
Yeah, I think you highlight it's that that trade-off point. And to mention the Reserve Bank governor again, he last week at an address, he mentioned that in policy there are only trade-offs. There's never one, you know, one is that one thing is perfect with no cost. So, yeah, in our context of declining civil service of departments that don't function like they should, I think there's a very important point around retaining the capacity and the skills, but also how you target then the spending on things like salaries and wages, that you do it for the right kind of people. There, I mean, this links to things like cater deployment and patronage networks, the, you know, real important things for the ANC specifically, how it's built so much influence over the years. If you then start to ask these kinds of searching questions about, you know, is the money going to the right people? Are they receiving the support they need? You want to retain the skills, the capacity, the knowledge, the years of muscle memory. You know, it should be really targeted, and you see the effect if that isn't done. If you favor just political connectedness over merit and skill and sort of capacity. So there is a question here. Maybe the issue will become more focused as the sort of debt situation continues. I know in the mini budget, Treasury does forecast the debt to GDP ratio to peak next year, but they are National Treasury and the Reserve Bank, well, more National Treasury, they are famous for overestimating our growth rates and underestimating our debt growth. So that remains to be seen. But for the time being, the debt picture is going to be tight, which means your spending needs to be as effective as possible. As Gabriel Krauser from the Institute of Race Relations has pointed out, South Africa hasn't had austerity. Our government expenditure has been growing for years, but the quality of government has been declining. So there again, the question is, yes, you want to spend on wages and have a public service, but are you really doing that in a value for money kind of way?
And comment on the sort of on the primary budget surplus, which, as I understand, is where income, it's achieved with income minus expenses, excluding interest payments, that the revenues actually exceeded our expenses. Talk a little bit around that, explain it to our audience.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So your primary budget surplus is, you achieve that when your revenue exceeds your non-interest expenditure. So that talks to our growing income, as it were. If this was your sort of personal, your household balance sheet, your salary, for example, exceeding your expenditure for a particular week or a particular month. And that is quite remarkable in and of itself, mm-hmm. and credit should be given. If indeed this happens, that this primary budget surplus improves to 2.5% of GDP, it would be an improvement from 0.5% of GDP in 2023-24.
Okay.
So that's over a longer period of time. It's not just 1 year or two. It does show you that there is a bit more fiscal tightening and fiscal responsibility. Not as much as, you know, those of us who want smaller government would want, but it's on the right kind of track, at least. So it is important to mention that. If it does improve to that 2.5%, that's equivalent to around 224 billion rand. So it's nothing to be sort of, you know, sneezed at. I think it is important. Let's see if they can continue to maintain that. And also, just, you know, in the context of a young government of national unity that has had various wobbles, there would still be the temptation to spend on big ticket items like the national health insurance, basic income grant. And those things might yet still in some way come about. Mm-hmm. However, it's important that we continue to not see real support for those in the mini budget or in the main budget. So resistance against some more populist spending items. And Minister Gorongwana, just on the NHI, he pointed out his concerns around the floating by the Department of Health, the idea to remove medical tax credits.
Yes.
The impact that would have on the middle class. So you are seeing some pushback from within some quarters in our government against, you know, more destructive policies. And that pushback is coming broadly from National Treasury and from the Reserve Bank. Mm.
I think people were quite impressed by that, because he said otherwise nothing else about NHI. And he was essentially supporting what he describes as the an attack on the middle class, as particularly the one-third of which pays most of the personal income tax. Our removal from the grey list, from being grey listed, rather.
Yeah, that's. I think that is real boon to National Treasury and people like the Deputy Minister of Finance, Ashil Sarupan, the work that they did in concert with entities like the NPA, our justice system. Whether they can follow up on this now is a different question, and if we can actually see prosecutions around, you know, sort of high level cases, because if you don't see that, then again, it's one thing to have it in the letter or the spirit of your sort of prosecution setup, but if you don't then actually enforce it or can't enforce it, then things like the Financial Action Task Force, they will then ask serious questions about, you know, are you doing what is best from a governance and a sort of oversight point of view. That does help in terms of just the appeal of our bonds, our financial sector. It is good from a narrative point of view, the fact that we did it so quickly.
And I was going to leave it there, but I just wanted to ask you quickly one question, and that is that Standard & Poor's have given us an upgrade. You just want to comment on that. Is it in response to this, to the medium-term budget statement?
Yeah, it's in response to a few things. So the medium-term budget policy statement, it's also in response to our removal from the grey list. It's also broadly a reflection of improved fiscal consolidation and our GDP growth rate hopefully lifting up from where it was. It's from a very low base, but hopefully lifting up. So this was the first time that Fitch has upgraded us, our credit rating, since 2005.
Okay.
So we could be seeing one or two signs of a turnaround, but in the data, I don't want to get on the hype train just yet. You mentioned earlier in our discussion, you know, everyone is getting bought into that this is the best budget ever. I'll give it some time to see. Let's see what we get in the main budget next year.
Chris, thanks very much for coming on and explaining all of that to us and give us a tiny little glimmer of hope for the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah.